A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel writes in with something more personal than his usual fare. He became a father at 36 after moving from Ireland to Israel, and he says the whole experience has fundamentally rewired him. He's shorter on sleep, crankier some days, chronically overloaded, but underneath all of that, he feels something he didn't expect. Relief. When Ezra was born, he says he mostly felt relief, like a mission beyond himself had finally clicked into place. He perpetuated the species, which he calls the foundational commandment of Judaism. He fulfilled an intergenerational role. He was born Jewish in the Irish diaspora, felt out of place, moved to Israel to be where the Jewish story has its roots, and now he's created a new life where he'll never have to feel that pain, that ambiguity between his place of birth and his peoplehood.
That's a lot packed into a first year.
It is. And then he gets to the money part. He says his relationship to work has changed. He used to put himself under enormous stress trying to find meaning in his career. Now he accepts that work is how you put bread on the table, and that acceptance is its own kind of liberation. He calls parenthood a clarifying force, something that brings you back to a more primordial form of human existence, where the basic necessities become transparent. Then he asks what the literature says about all of this, especially for first-time parents on the older side.
So today we're asking what becoming a parent actually does to a person. Not the sleepless nights and the diaper changes, but the deeper stuff, the identity stuff.
Right. And the first thing I want to push on is whether the transformation is real, or whether Daniel's just exhausted and telling himself a nice story. Because everything he describes, the relief, the mission, the legitimacy, it maps onto a pattern that's very recognizable. But the research suggests something more specific is happening than just confirmation bias.
It's structural. There's a study out of Israel from 2024 that looked at first-time parents and how their identities reorganize. What they found is that parent becomes what they call a central identity node. It's not that you add parent to the list of things you are, worker, partner, child of your own parents. It's that parent moves to the top and everything else gets reordered around it. Your worker identity now exists in relation to your parent identity. Your sense of yourself as someone's child gets reframed because now you're someone's parent. It's hierarchical, not additive.
So it's not a new room added to the house. It's a renovation where the new room becomes the load-bearing wall.
That's actually not bad. And the load-bearing wall metaphor matters because it explains why the change feels so total. You can't just walk out of the new room and go back to the old house. The old house doesn't exist anymore.
But Daniel was 36. He had a fully formed adult identity, a work history, relationship patterns, a self-narrative that had been running for decades. Does that make the renovation easier or harder?
Harder in a specific way. The identity disruption is more acute for older first-time parents because the pre-parent self is more established. A 25-year-old is still figuring out who they are, so parenthood slots into an identity that's still under construction. A 36-year-old has to demolish load-bearing walls. There's more to revise, more to grieve, more to renegotiate. The upside is that older parents tend to have more emotional regulation and more resources, but the internal renovation is bigger.
That's the part I think most people get wrong. They assume older parents have it easier because they're more settled, but settled means there's more to unsettle.
And there's a concrete example that illustrates this. Think about the person who spent 15 years building a career identity around being the one who stays late, the one who's available for the last-minute project, the one who defines themselves by professional responsiveness. Then a baby arrives, and suddenly staying late isn't a virtue, it's a betrayal. The identity that took 15 years to build gets renegotiated in a single conversation with a partner who's been home with a crying infant for 9 hours.
And that renegotiation isn't just about scheduling. It's about who you thought you were.
Right. The stay-late person thought they were dedicated. Now they have to wonder if they were just avoiding something. The parent identity forces that kind of audit.
So the renovation isn't just adding walls. It's inspecting the existing foundation.
And then there's the hormonal layer, which is where my pediatrician brain gets interested. Everyone knows about the hormonal changes in mothers, but fathers go through measurable changes too. Testosterone drops, oxytocin and prolactin go up. These are the bonding hormones, the ones that shift your brain from mate-seeking and status-seeking mode into caregiving mode. It's not just a feeling, it's a physiological reorganization that happens in response to caring for an infant.
So the identity node isn't just a metaphor, there's biology underneath it.
Right, and there's a framework for this that started with mothers but is increasingly applied to fathers too. It's called matrescence, or patrescence for fathers. The idea is that becoming a parent is a developmental stage comparable to adolescence. Your brain is literally rewiring itself. The neural circuits that handle threat detection, empathy, emotional regulation, they all get reconfigured. It's not a metaphor either. There are imaging studies showing changes in gray matter in new parents.
So Daniel's sense that he's become a different person isn't just poetry, it's neurology.
It's both. And the relief he describes, I think that's the most interesting part of what he wrote. Not joy, relief. That's a documented phenomenon. Researchers describe it as the resolution of a purpose gap. You spend your adult life with this low-grade anxiety about what your life is for, whether you're doing the right thing, whether any of it matters. And then a baby arrives and the question is answered. Not because you figured it out, but because the question stops being optional. The mission is now inescapable and unambiguous.
Keep the baby alive. Feed the baby. Teach the baby. There's no existential ambiguity in a dirty diaper.
And that's what Erickson called generativity. He mapped out stages of psychosocial development, and the stage that corresponds to middle adulthood is about generativity versus stagnation. The drive shifts from building yourself to contributing to the next generation. Parenthood is the most direct route to generativity, but it's not the only one, which is why Daniel's caveat matters. He's careful to say he doesn't mean this prescriptively, and he's right not to. People who don't have children can absolutely find generativity through mentoring, teaching, creative work, community building, but parenthood is the biological express lane.
So Daniel's relief is the sound of a purpose gap closing. The anxiety of not having a clear existential mission suddenly gets resolved. Not by a philosophy, not by a career achievement, but by a baby who needs to be fed at 3 a.m.
And the fact that it's 3 a.m. isn't incidental to the transformation. The sleep deprivation, the overload, the chronic time pressure, those aren't just the price you pay. They're part of the mechanism.
How do you mean?
There's a framework from trauma research called post-traumatic growth. The idea is that challenge plus meaning equals transformation. Stress alone breaks people. But stress that's framed as purposeful, as serving something bigger than yourself, it produces growth rather than breakdown. Early parenthood is a perfect case study. The stress is enormous, the meaning is enormous, and the combination rewires you. This is why Daniel can say he's crankier but more satisfied, and both things are true. The crankiness is real. The satisfaction is real. They're not intention. They're the same process.
So the overload isn't a bug. It's a feature. It forces prioritization in a way that abstract goal setting never does.
And that connects to the primordial thing he mentioned. He says parenthood brings you back to a more basic form of human existence where necessities become transparent. I think he's onto something real. Scarcity of time and energy forces you to strip away everything that doesn't matter. You don't have the luxury of agonizing over whether your career is meaningful when you have 45 minutes between the baby going down and your own collapse. The question becomes very simple. Does this feed the family? Does this keep the household running? Everything else gets cut.
The clarifying force. It's like a forced minimalism for the soul.
And the interesting thing is that this shows up in the research on work centrality. Parents, especially fathers, often report lower emotional investment in career advancement after children. But they report higher satisfaction with work that's stable and provides. The meaning moves from the work itself to what the work enables. Daniel's exactly right about this. He used to stress about finding meaning in his job. Now he accepts that work is how you put bread on the table, and that acceptance is liberating. The bread is the meaning.
That's a big shift for a lot of people. Especially in a culture that tells you your job should be your passion, and your passion should be your job.
And it's a shift that happens faster when you have a baby. Because the baby doesn't care about your career arc. The baby cares about whether there's food and whether someone responds when they cry. The baby is the ultimate reality check.
The baby isn't judging you, but the baby is also not impressed by your job title.
Right. And that brings us to the Jewish diaspora angle, which is where Daniel's reflection gets really specific. He talks about being born Jewish in Ireland, feeling out of place, moving to Israel to be where the Jewish story has its roots. And then he says, Ezra will never have to feel the pain of realizing the country you hold a passport from may not feel warmly about your people. That's a very particular kind of relief.
It's not just personal. It's intergenerational. He's not just saying I have a mission. He's saying I fulfilled a role in a chain that goes back thousands of years.
And there's a phrase for that in Jewish thought. L'dor v'dor, from generation to generation. It's not just a nice sentiment. It's a structural principle. Children aren't just a personal choice in that framework. They're continuity. They're how the people survives. Daniel says he perpetuated the species, and he calls it the foundational commandment of Judaism. He's not wrong. The very first commandment in the Torah is to be fruitful and multiply.
For Daniel, having Ezra isn't just about becoming a father. It's about fulfilling a role that was assigned to him before he was born, being a link in a chain.
The research backs up the connection between children and Jewish continuity. Studies on Jewish identity in the diaspora consistently find that having children is one of the strongest predictors of continued Jewish engagement. The child becomes the reason to reconnect with community, with tradition, with peoplehood. You might drift away from observance in your 20s, but then you have a kid and suddenly you're thinking about circumcision, about naming ceremonies, about how to raise them with some connection to the tradition.
The child is the reason to care again.
Daniel's specific situation, moving from diaspora to Israel, that's a documented driver of Aliyah. The desire to raise children in a place where Jewish identity is the default rather than the exception. In the diaspora, Jewish identity is something you have to actively maintain. It takes work. In Israel, the calendar is Jewish. The language is Hebrew. The national holidays are Jewish holidays. The ambient culture is Jewish. You don't have to explain yourself.
Ezra won't grow up with that ambiguity Daniel describes. The conflict between your place of birth and your peoplehood. That's a specific kind of gift.
It is, and I think it's worth naming what that ambiguity actually feels like, because Daniel describes it as pain. Not anger, not resentment. Pain. The pain of realizing that the country you hold a passport from may not feel warmly about your people. That's a very Irish-Jewish experience, I think. Ireland has a complicated history with Jews. Small community, some warmth, some coldness. Daniel's described it before as never quite fitting.
Then he moves to Israel and builds a life there and has a son, and suddenly the question of where he belongs is answered. Not just for him, but for the next generation.
The child is a statement about belonging. That's the thing. It's not just a personal legacy. It's a declaration that this is where the family continues. This is where the story goes forward.
We've got the internal identity shift. The neurological rewiring, the generativity, the work and money piece, the primordial clarifying force, and then the cultural and religious frame. That's a lot of transformation packed into 1 year.
The thing that strikes me is how all of these layers reinforce each other. The biology supports the psychology. The psychology supports the cultural framework. The cultural framework supports the sense of mission. It's not that Daniel's experience is one thing with several interpretations. It's that several real processes are happening simultaneously, and they all point in the same direction.
That's what makes it feel like a transformation, rather than a change of opinion. A change of opinion you can reverse. A transformation rewires the underlying structure.
The rewiring is happening in real time. Daniel's only a year in. The research suggests the identity reorganization continues for years. The parent identity node doesn't stop reordering things after the first birthday. It keeps working.
What he's describing now is the early phase, the dramatic phase, but the renovation is ongoing.
Right. And that's where I want to hear from someone who's been through the practical side.
I ran a fatherhood preparation workshop circuit in the late 90s. Charged new dads $40 a head to learn the emotional transition. Had a laminated flip chart. Phrases like your needs are now negotiable and the baby isn't judging you. Thought I was providing a service. Looking back, I was mostly providing laminated paper.
What did the dads actually get out of it?
Hard to say. I had a purpose audit exercise where they ranked their life priorities. Anonymous response cards. Most common answer was sleep. Not family, not career, not meaning. Sleep. I still have the cards in a shoebox somewhere.
Did you ever help anyone?
Not sure. I helped myself. Decided not to have kids for another 6 years after running those workshops.
That's a pretty strong endorsement of the material.
The material was fine. The problem was the framing. Everyone wanted to talk about the transcendent moments. The first smile, the first steps. Nobody wanted to talk about the fact that the first year is mostly administrative work. Scheduling, logistics, coordinating with a partner who's also exhausted, 90% paperwork, 10% transcendence.
The clarifying force Daniel describes, you'd say it's real, but also deeply boring?
It's both. The clarity comes from realizing how much of your pre-parent life was spent on things that were never going to matter. You don't have time for those things anymore, so they fall away. That part's real. But what's left is a lot of spreadsheets and a lot of conversations about whose turn it's to wash the bottles.
The primordial existence is mostly logistics.
Primordial man didn't have to coordinate daycare pickup with a spouse who's stuck in traffic. Primordial man just carried the baby and walked. We've got the same brain, but more forms to fill out.
The shoebox of response cards. What would you find if you opened it?
Sleep, sleep, sleep. My wife, sleep, not sure, sleep. A few guys wrote money. One wrote golf, which I respected for the honesty. The point is, nobody wrote transcendence. Nobody wrote meaning. They wrote the thing that was missing.
Which is its own kind of clarity, I suppose.
It is. The baby doesn't care about your purpose. The baby cares about whether you show up. That's the whole lesson. I put it on the flip chart. The baby isn't judging you. But the baby is watching.
You still have the flip chart?
Laminated. In the same box as the cards. The corners are bent, but the phrases hold up.
The transformation is real, but the lived experience is mostly showing up. That's not a contradiction.
No. It's the whole thing. You show up tired, you show up annoyed, you show up because there's no choice. And after a year of that, you're someone different, not because of the transcendent moments, because of the Tuesday afternoons.
That's the part the research doesn't capture. The Tuesday afternoons.
Research never captures Tuesday afternoons. That's why I had the flip chart.
What do we do with the shoebox? It sounds like the most honest data set on early fatherhood anyone's ever collected.
It's in the back of a closet. I could bring it in. Though I'm not sure what you'd do with 40 response cards that all say sleep.
Frame them. Put them in a museum. The sleep archive of late 90s fatherhood.
I'd have to find the box first. It's behind the archery equipment.
Of course it is.
The point is, Daniel's right about the transformation. But the transformation is mostly made of small, boring things. That's not a criticism. It's just what it's made of.
The small, boring things are the load-bearing walls.
Something like that. Anyway, I'm on the clock.
The open question Daniel leaves us with is this. If parenthood is a clarifying force, what does it clarify for people who don't become parents? He's careful to say he doesn't mean this prescriptively, and the research supports that caution. Generativity can be fulfilled through other channels, but the cultural weight of parenthood makes those other channels harder to find and harder to defend.
As more people delay parenthood into their late 30s and 40s, the identity disruption Daniel describes is going to become more common. The support structures, parental leave, workplace policies, community expectations, they're still built around younger parents. The older first-time parent is becoming the norm, but the scaffolding hasn't caught up.
That's the thing to watch. Not whether the transformation is real, we've established that it is, but whether we build structures that honor it. For the parents and for the non-parents who are finding generativity through other routes.
Daniel asked for meditations and thoughts. I think the meditation is this. The relief he felt is the sound of a question being answered that he didn't know he was asking, and the answer wasn't a philosophy, it was a person. A small, demanding, sleep-destroying person who reorganized everything.
We'd love to hear from listeners who've been through their own version of this. Whether you became a parent at 25 or 45, or whether you found your clarifying force somewhere else entirely.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping the show running and for the laminated wisdom.
This has been My Weird Prompts, the Human AI Collaboration Podcast. Email us at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.